out to go a wandering along the mountain track. And as I go, I love to sing my knapsack on my back.
Right across the table from us. This is Syl Stemmen, and
this is Sandy Washington.
And we had a little glitch after Michelle talked with us on Tuesday. And, you know, I have to tell you, Michelle needs a pat on the back from all of us because she does have our back. Michelle, you're here. You're doing it again with us. We'll try to make it pretty close. But if you've had, I know there. We all would like to react to your Halloween.
Well, thank you. I had so much fun doing that yesterday. And just thank you so much to all the residents and team members who did participate in that. You know, I love seeing how creative everyone is, and I love seeing, you know, just everybody having fun. You know, that's something I'm really passionate about.
Well, keep thinking, people, because Michelle is already thinking about next Halloween.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always am.
It's your favorite holiday of the year, isn't it?
It probably is my favorite holiday because, you know, it's just a day filled with fun. You know, just fun all day long. You know, you don't overeat or anything like that. It's just fun. So.
And the weather cooperated for our trick-or-treaters.
You know what, guys? I did not have one trick-or-treater. Not one.
Really?
Yeah. We had our lights on, the whole nine. So, anyway, I'm going to move.
That's disappointing.
Yeah.
Your neighborhood is getting old.
It is.
No.
It is.
But that's part of the fun. I always liked handing it out after.
Me too. Yeah.
Our kids grew up.
What trick-or-treating has changed over the years?
Yeah, that's
They've
what they say.
They've changed a lot.
Yeah, a lot of kids do that trunk-or-treating thing where they go and people like decorate the trunks of their cars and they go around like that. But I was listening to the radio this morning, oddly enough, another station. I know that sounds weird, but you know, the DJs were talking about how they had like 75 and 100 trick-or-treaters, and I'm just thinking, where do they live? I have to maybe I should move.
So, we used to have some come in here, I
did
think.
We?
Well, years ago, I think that we all sat in a chair and looked at these children, handed them something. I can't remember how that worked, but
yeah,
I think it was only a couple of years that we did that. Well, Michelle, thank you. I can't stop saying that. It's wonderful that you protect your residents the way you do.
We're so happy to have you here.
I appreciate again. You guys. Thank you.
I hope you'll come several times.
Now, was it James Carville or something? I can't remember. Somebody always said that, you know, don't let facts get in the way of a good story. So I can't guarantee it's going to be the exact same story.
Well, it might have a different twist to it, but I think people are wanting to hear that missed it on Tuesday.
Sure.
So
sure.
Take it away.
Well, I'll get into that. One of the questions that Sandy and Syl asked me is, where was I during Hurricane Katrina? And Hurricane Katrina was back in 2005, and it was about this time, it was actually August 31st. And I always remember that because that was right around Sophia's birthday. Her birthday is September 1st. And every year around her birthday, it was always hurricane season. And so as a child, she was absolutely 100% obsessed with the weather because it had ruined birthday parties of hers, or she'd seen trees down in her neighborhood. And when other children would come home and watch the Disney Channel after school, she would always turn on the Weather Channel, and she would Jim Cantore was her idol. She would get the hairbrush and the windbreaker and go out on the balcony and give the weather report during all of the rainstorms and everything.
That.
So that's just something that I always remember about that one funny little glimmer about things. I'll never forget one year, the river, we lived close to the Mississippi River, and the river had risen, and I had Sophia had gone to the bathroom or something, and she was very small, and I know she's going to hate that I'm telling this story, but I noticed she came out of the bathroom and she didn't flush the water. And I was like, oh, Sophia, you have to flush the water. And I started to go back in there and she's like, no, don't, because she was afraid that it was going to affect the levels of the river.
Oh my goodness.
She didn't want to cause a flood or anything like that. So anyway, yes, give Sophia a little fun about her obsession with the weather. But where I was at the time was working in a nursing facility. And I know we're not supposed to use that word facility. We're supposed to use the word community. But back in at the time, that's what we called it, and that's what I was so accustomed to saying. But it was called Acadian Rehab and Nursing Facility. It was literally in the name. And we were in Baton Rouge, and we were owned by a company called Millennium Management. And Millennium Management was run by one guy, Dan Brown, and then Connie Kurz was the operations person, and there were a couple other people there. So it wasn't a big operation like CLC. And we probably had six different facilities. I think there were three in New Orleans and three in Baton Rouge. And so when it came time to evacuate for Hurricane Katrina, they were going to evacuate New Orleans and bring them into their communities in Baton Rouge. And so that these were all grand plans, and we talked about it, and we discussed it, and you know, that's about it. And then they said, okay, well, on this particular day, you know, about 1 o'clock, you're going to get the people from this other community from New Orleans. I want to say it was St. Charles Healthcare, but I know it wasn't, because St. Charles Healthcare, I think, still existed, and this place ceased to exist after this. But anyway, I do forget the name of it. So they had 195 residents that lived there. This was skilled nursing, long-term care, no independent, no assisted living, all long-term care. And I worked at a place that had 184, the capacity for 184 people. And my census at the time was about 175. So I only had 9 beds available, and they're bringing 195 people to me. But I was young and naive and just dumb enough to think, yeah, we can do this. And I got my A team together. I had an outstanding team at that community, just rock star people that, you know, were really there for all the right reasons. And so we got together, planned it out, decided who was going to keep people entertained, who was going to, you know, monitor people, who was going to do all the things. We're ready for them. And so 1 o'clock rolls around, and we're all smiling and excited. Yay, they're coming, and we're going to give them the best experience. And we learned that it was taking, instead of what normally is about an hour drive from Baton Rouge to New Orleans, it was taking between 10 and 12 hours to come to, you know, to get out of New Orleans to get to Baton Rouge. And so by the time these people rolled in, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And we were not the fresh faces that we had been 12 hours earlier, but you know, we still put on our little, did the best we could. And what happened is they had decided, because we had such a strong clinical team, that they would send kind of the sickest to us, and that we would be responsible for people who had wounds, people who required PEG tube feeding, people who needed high levels of oxygen, just people who had some pretty acute needs. And so one by one, ambulances came, and they dropped these individuals off, and we got them into the building and got that settled. And then they sent 4 of those big giant tour buses full of people. And you have to understand that the people that were on these tour buses had been sitting on this bus for 12 hours. 12 hours. There were a lot of incontinence issues. There were a lot of people who were really tired. There were a lot of people who were confused and angry and just didn't know what was going on. So I think it was a very very frightening experience for them and very frustrating as well. And so we're not dealing with happy people coming off the buses, but most of them couldn't get off of the buses. So we had to call the fire department, who came and helped us unload four buses full of people. And then they had put all of their wheelchairs in the storage area underneath the bus. So that was a lot of fun trying to figure out whose wheelchair belonged to who when you literally did not know these people. And they brought some staff with them, but by the time the staff got there, they were really frustrated and tired and, you know, just kind of were done with the situation. But then finally, a U-Haul bus came, and the U-Haul bus was full of mattresses. And if you've seen nursing home mattresses, they're not that great. I mean, they're just not. They're twin size mattresses that are waterproof, and that's about the extent of it. So these all went onto floors throughout our corridors. We put some people in rooms with other people because all of those rooms had two people in it. So now sometimes it would have three people in it. And, you know, we all got up and made all of these beds and put them together, and their staff helped with that as well, and got everybody cleaned up and got everyone, you know, down for the night.
It must have taken hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think any of us slept. And then before you know it, yeah, we were getting ready for breakfast and getting, you know, the next day ready. Mm. And it was, we also had a memory care unit there. And that was for our residents who, you know, had wandering problems, you know, cognition issues. And we had 24 residents there. And this community that came to us also had a memory care unit with, happened to be, 24 residents in there as well. So while I only had the capacity for 24 residents, now there's 48 residents in there with dementia, with psychotic issues. You know, it just, it was not the environment that I wanted it to be and had been so proud of, because with our 24 area unit, 24 capacity, you know, it was quiet, it was very well managed, but now you introduce confusion to the situation. So again, not good. The executive director of that other community was very, very hands-off. We had a little psych hospital down the street that had closed, and we had converted that. We'd gone and put mattresses down there, made all the beds, did everything for him and the staff to stay there, and he stayed there the whole time. I don't recall seeing him ever come over to my community, but he would call and he would complain about things from time to time because somebody told him one day that I had bought pizza for my staff but not his staff. And if any one of you know me, you know for a fact I would never do something like that. And so, you know, I was like, well, you're welcome to come down and see what we're doing. So anyway, he declined that offer. But then, you know, we just made do with it. We still had electricity. You know, we were doing okay. And then the hurricane actually hit. And then we lost electricity. But we still had our generator. But our generators, you know, keep in mind this was almost 20 years ago. Things were different. Our generators didn't control the air conditionings. Our generators didn't control the washing machines or the dryers or anything like that. I remember we had to wash loads and loads of clothes at a laundromat down the street. Wow. And that became like this thing every day, was who was going to go get quarters, who was going to go find quarters so we could wash tons and tons of laundry. So anyway, but we're having fun in our own way. You know, we're from Louisiana, so we've got somebody coming by to make jambalaya for us in the courtyard. You know, we're having cookouts every day. We're all hanging out outside as much as we can, just enjoying each other. And I spent a good 2 weeks spend the night there. But at one point, after the hurricane was over and we're planning, okay, we're going to get these people back to New Orleans, we realized that's when the levees broke. And the levees flooded this area where this community was located. And we saw on the news, we were all sitting there watching it together, and we saw on the New Orleans news that that community had 8 feet of water. We could see, you know, the doors were covered, everything. And so we knew that they weren't going back, not anytime soon. So we couple days later, you know, figured we've got to make a plan here. We've got to get some of these people out because it's just too crowded. And we're losing their staff left and right because, you know, their staff, they didn't know where their families were. A lot of them went to Houston, and as soon as the staff would find out where their families were, they left. And rightfully so. You know, family first, I get it. I really do. But so we had to figure out what to do. You know, we were well above capacity. So we talked to a lot of the residents, and we found some communities in Texas where they were able to take some people. And they were able to, collectively, we found placement for about 60 people altogether. And so we talked with them, you know, okay, who wants to go to Texas? And so several people decided, yes, you know, get me out of this situation because it was way too crowded. And at least if I go to Texas, I can have my own bed, much, you know, instead of a mattress on the floor. So we made this plan, we arranged transportation, we did all the things. And then the day comes, and the transportation comes, and there's some vans, and there's some ambulances, and there's all those things. And the first EMT, as we're getting to load someone up, he tells me, he said, did you hear what's happening at the Baton Rouge General? And the Baton Rouge General is the local hospital that's two blocks from Acadian Rehab and Nursing Center. We're at 4005 North Boulevard. They're two blocks over on Acadian Thruway. So anyway, I said, no, what's happening there? And he told me that these gangs from New Orleans had commandeered the parking structure at the Baton Rouge General. It was about a four-story parking structure, and they said that these gangs were there shooting people from the parking structure. And this is a parking structure that, you know, I had really good fond memories of. We would always go up there every year and watch fireworks at 4th of July. And so it just broke my heart to think that, you know, this is happening in my city, and especially so close to, you know, my community and my residents. And so I didn't think it was safe anymore to continue with what we were doing. So I said, stop everything right now. Everyone go back inside. We are not doing this today. I thank the EMT for giving me the information and sorry for wasting his time, but you need to leave because I don't think it's safe for anyone to be here. So we all went back inside and I locked the doors. And I had also had to terminate my maintenance person earlier in that situation because sometimes it's just easier to do things yourself than just sit there and argue with someone the whole time. So rather than argue, I just said, I'm going to do it myself. So anyway, he had to go. So in retaliation, he called the fire marshal's office and told them that I had locked people in the building. And so the fire marshal came out to see if that was in fact true. And when he got there, I wouldn't let him in either. And I explained to him what was going on and what the EMT had told me and how I didn't think it was safe for him to be outside either. So I suggested that he leave, and he did. And nothing ever came of that with, you know, I didn't get in trouble or anything. But I had to call that guy, Dan Brown, that owned the company, and explain to him why I was not transporting these 60 people today like I had told him I was and like he had helped me plan to do. And I told him what was going on, what the EMT had told me, and he asked me if I had ever shot a gun. And I said, well, of course, you know, being a proud Louisiana girl, not telling him that it was a BB gun. But anyway, so he must not have been far away because he drives to my community and he gets out and he hands me two handguns. And he has extra ammunition and he has bullets in each of the clips of the handguns. And he told me, you know, if you have to shoot someone, I want you to shoot until there are no more bullets left in this chamber, you know, and then reload it and shoot again if you have to. But keep these loaded and do not let me find them, you know, with bullets still in them if you had to use it. And I just thought that was the craziest Tuesday I'd ever had at work. So I just took the handguns and I went to my office and I just put them in a drawer and I just prayed to God that I would never have to use them or anything. And so we went on about our day, and then I got home. No, I didn't get home. I was watching the news later, and I saw that the news earlier in the day had been reporting a lot of the same crazy things about how the gangs had commandeered the Baton Rouge General, that people were being, businesses were being looted, and people were being robbed, and all these terrible stories. And later on the news, they recanted all of that, and they said that that was not true, that they were getting, you know, inaccurate information from people. And so what happened, what they told me happened at the Baton Rouge General probably really didn't happen, because businesses were not being looted or anything like that. So it all could have been avoided, you know, if there just wasn't so much misinformation out there. And so, you know, to make a long story really short, eventually some people did get to Texas, but some people stayed at Acadian for years and years and years, just, you know, never left. And, you know, we grew wiser for it, and I think we grew stronger, and we definitely grew stronger as a team. You know, when you go through something like that, you really know who you can count on, and it brought a lot of us much closer. So that's where I was.
And everyone was safe.
And everyone was safe.
You did not lose anybody.
I didn't. There was one person in the memory care unit, Joseph Johnson. His name just hit me. Joseph Johnson. And somehow he did walk out of our community, but he had on an armband that said where he had come from, that place in New Orleans. And of course, whoever found him tried to call there, but there was no one there answering phones. And it's different now, because if we had had that situation happen right now, we could have our phones, if we had to evacuate, we could have them switched somewhere else. But anyway, he somehow ended up in a shelter, and someone at the shelter, the people who were our surveyors, normally our state surveyors, were working in the shelter, and they knew that Dan Brown owned that community that was on his armband, so they found out where they evacuated to, and that's how they ended up bringing him back to us. But no one died. My little mishap with Joseph Johnson, but he came back safe. And from that experience, you know, we learned that when you do an evacuation, not only put where you've come from, but put where you're going in case, you know, something like that happens again. And the other things that we really learned from the experience were just how to treat staff. You know, the staff are in that same kind of crisis mode as those residents are. And after that, I did several hurricane evacuations and became a host facility many times. And you know, we really learned, treat those staff like gold, you know, because they're a great source of information to you. They actually know these residents, and they're, you know, left their families behind to come be with these residents, and you just treat them like gold and like celebrities. So,
you know, you learned a lot, and we benefit from what you've learned. A story popped into my mind that you told us a long time ago, and briefly, it's hard to do. When you first were looking for a job, you read the paper. Okay, do you remember
yes,
what I'm talking
oh,
about?
Yes, I remember that very well. I was actually not looking for a job. What happened is I was a senior in college, and I knew that I'd be graduating soon, and I just wanted the experience of having an interview, because I hadn't gone on interviews before. Any little job that I'd had been because my friend's mom worked there or something like that, or same with Sophia working here, because, you know, you just know somebody. And so I needed to practice interviewing, and so I applied for every job in the paper, and there was one called Louisiana Guest House, which is the place that I worked right before Acadian Rehab and Nursing. But anyway, so they called me for an interview, and I was so excited. So I went to the interview, and I used all my interview skills that I had learned in school. I asked them questions. I had statistics. I had done research. I'd done everything. And it was a great interview, and so great that they offered me the job, and I was not looking for a job, so I had to turn that down and explain to him that I was really there just practicing my interview skills. So he called me back, and he offered me his job because he was getting a promotion, and I was like, are y'all crazy? And I found out later, yes, they absolutely were crazy. I had no business running anything like this, but I asked them how much it paid, and they told me $65,000 a year, and I knew that none of my friends, you know, were making that coming out of college. So they let me finish my last semester and work in the evenings and work around my schedule. And I did the business office manager job there, and I did what's called an AIT program, an administrator and training program. And that's how I got to Holly Creek today.
Pretty impressive. You also had a little career wasn't a career. Being a bear?
Yes, yes, yes. That was my absolute most favorite job that I've had year to date. I know I say I love working here a lot, but I really loved that job because that job was from Wednesdays from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. And what happened is this was in college. I worked at the Holiday Inn in bookkeeping there. And every day at 5 o'clock when I would drive home, I would see this bear at the Shoney's restaurant on Wednesdays. And he was this mopey bear that was in the parking lot, you know, kind of waving at people. And I just thought every single time, I'm like, I could do that so much better. And so one day I just turned in and I was, you know, I'd like to speak with the manager. And I said, you know, I would like to have that bear's job. And that bear was just like a cook or a chef or a dishwasher or something. And they were happy not to have that job. So they gave me the job. I think I made maybe $3.15 an hour. I know it was, I think my check was about $15 for each week that I'd work, and it was only on Wednesdays. But, you know, I'd put on that bear costume, and I would dance my head off. I'd run around that restaurant. I was stealing the kids' French fries. I was sitting on the kids. I mean, it was a good time. It was just a straight good time for 3 hours, and it was hot. Gosh, it was hot. But I was young, and it was silly, and I didn't care.
So we're safe from not seeing a bear in our dining room?
No, you're not. Let me get a hold of that mascot costume and you will see that bear in your dining room.
Well, no wonder you like Halloween.
Exactly.
That's just part of your nature, isn't it?
I think so.
It is. I just love to have fun.
And there is another opportunity for you to become kind of an entrepreneur.
I am an entrepreneur.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
But it began early. Or how many years ago since you bought a company?
Well, I started this company in 2010. And Sophia, don't tell her I told you this, please, but she had just had head lice and she was in school. And I had to go through all the chemicals and trying to get that out and trying to handle it myself. And Sophia has a lot of thick hair. And this was really hard. And so the iPad had just came out, and I ordered an iPad. And, you know, when you get an iPad or an iPhone, you have to put apps on it. And this was new to me. I didn't know what apps, you know, to put. But I had heard that the New York Times had an app, so I put that on there. And I said, I'm reading my iPad now, and I've got my app. And one of the articles that I read was about a medical device that had just gotten FDA clearance to kill head lice, and it did it through desiccation, and so it just dried them up. And I was like, oh wow, that's so much more effective than the chemicals, because they have the little eggs that they lay called nits, and when you put the chemical on, that little nit is encapsulated, and so the chemical has to be really strong to break through that and kill what's inside of it. So it normally doesn't happen. So you normally have to wait for the eggs to hatch and then put the chemicals on again. And this way, it was just seemed so much more efficient. And I was like, what a great idea. So I called up the University of Utah, because that's who made the, that's who had the article was about. And I asked them, you know, what are you guys going to do with this? And they didn't know. They just said, we just came out with it. You know, we haven't decided. So I said, well, I want to start a business and I want to kill head lice in my spare time. And so they flew from Utah to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and sat in a conference room at my office and showed me how to use this and showed me this specific pattern that you had to use and taught me everything. And so then I taught others how to do it and I started a little business, and it's called Knitwits of Louisiana, and our slogan is "We're outwitting nits one head at a time." Yeah. You can look us up online. We're right there.
And do you still own that business?
Absolutely, I do. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, before Sophia came to work at Holly Creek, she had worked there for years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. She's my best cousin.
No more lice.
No more lice.
I don't know if I dare ask another question since we have less than a minute left.
Oh, well, it's been
Michelle, what a delightful time to spend with you.
Thank you.
I'm sure the listeners have enjoyed it as well. And thank you again for being watching our backs.
It's my
We're
absolute
so glad
pleasure.
You are here.
It is my pleasure. Yeah, so thank you. And thank you guys for just being, you know, such active members of our community and doing this show. And you know, little things like this, I think, really enrich the community that we have. And I'm really proud of you guys for doing this.
So nice that people have a chance to hear.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And that's Wanderings for today. So long.